This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Mike McKee from Observe It.
Good morning, Ian. How are you? As you say, my name is Mike McKee. I'm Canadian. Don't mind the accent, but I live in Boston, which is where the headquarters of Observe It is. Observe It's a cybersecurity company focused on insider threat management. Put differently, we try to detect insider threats, help folks with investigations, and ultimately prevent data exfiltration.
We hear a lot about insider threat. There's a lot of confusion as to what it really means. Is it just a rogue employee? Is it somebody who used to work here? Is it the cleaner? Can you give us a better view as to what insider threat really means?
It can be the cleaner, I guess. But normally I would think about insider threat encompassing all employees, all contractors. It can really be anyone. Most of the time people are good people, but every once in a while they make mistakes, either because they don't know the security policies or they're not in a great state of mind. Maybe it's part of an acquisition. Maybe it's someone who's on a leaving list. Maybe it's someone who's just joined. Maybe it's someone who's looking for competitive information. But more and more, the threat is large. A lot of cybersecurity has been focused on the external threat. But if you look at all the different reports out there, there's almost always a person involved in a data breach, and that person's an insider. Quite often, organizations don't have enough visibility or early warning signs when that insider might be doing something outside of the security policies.
If I think about what comes across my desk as both a journalist and an analyst, often when these things get to me, it's all about an individual did something. The implication being that it was a deliberate act by somebody, as opposed to an accident or a lack of training or not thinking. In your experience, how often is this really somebody doing something on purpose to cause damage to a company, and how often is it just a lack of knowledge?
I would say more often than not, it's someone just making a mistake. I use myself as an example sometimes. I was at a company and I was using Dropbox because I was trying to communicate with our services consultants in the field and our support personnel and share information. And the VP of security came in and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm trying to get work done." And he said, "Don't you realize we've standardized on OneDrive?" And I said, "No, I didn't know that." A lot of the time it is people just trying to do their job. What they're doing is they're putting information at risk without realizing it. Having said that, there's increasing examples of people that are trying to take information out and trying to take that intellectual property in a way that they shouldn't. There's so many forces out there in terms of more contractors working with companies, more millennials being in the work environment with less loyalty to companies and changing companies all the time, more people working from home, all the while you've got much easier access to information because a lot of the information is in the cloud as opposed to in the server in headquarters. A lot of the forces point to more distributed information with more employees and contractors that have less loyalty to the company. That's when intellectual property can get stolen.
How do we track this? If we think of it from an IT perspective, when we controlled all systems, we knew what it was. But that's not been the case for a very long time, and cloud has made that even more complicated for us. We don't really know where the data is, where users have stored the data. They're using their phone, their tablet, their laptop, their personal cloud services, because that's convenient for them. How do we begin to get a handle on what our threat perspective is?
Our belief is it all starts with visibility. You can't fix what you can't see. Our technology is based on a lightweight agent put on endpoints. That allows people to see activity across all applications, web pages, databases that a user goes to. Quite often, organizations have information on those different areas, but it's not all in one spot. As a result, they're trying to piece together information and they're trying to deduce what happened, as opposed to effectively a transcript of what the person did. The key thing is to get as much visibility as you can. It's impossible to get perfect visibility. Quite often, we have example of someone saying, "Hey, what if they take a screenshot with their phone in their pocket and they send it out to someone?" And we'll be honest, we don't catch that. We're not going to automatically turn on laptop cameras. That doesn't go so well. But we do provide a lot of visibility based on what people are doing on the devices that they're working on most often.
That visibility, how do I understand the process that a user has made? Because somebody may see something and have access to it in one application, but to steal it or to do something, they'll move it into another thing. There's multiple actions here, and often we tend to just pick off discrete points of what a user is doing rather than have a coherent story.
So much cybersecurity tools out there fire off a lot of alerts. People think, if I get the alert, I'm all set. If you don't have that transcript, or if you don't have what happened before the alert, what happened after the alert, the context around it, it's just noise most of the time. Our software provides that transcript, and it can provide it in a metadata form. And unlike log files, it's actually metadata that you can read because we're capturing URLs, we're capturing application names, we're capturing keystrokes, such that you can see the file name of what they sent. You can see that they went to Gmail. You can see that they went to Google Chrome or whatever it might be. We believe that that context before and after the alert is frankly more important than the alert. Being able to confidently say, okay, that's not a concern. And to your earlier point, Ian, usually it's not a concern. This is something that is opposite to what a lot of companies are going to say, but we have a lot of false positives. We allow people to understand it's a false positive in minutes. We allow them to understand it's a false positive with confidence. And that allows them to dig into the ones that aren't false positives and realize it's worth their time to try to look more deeply into what happened around those alerts that went off.
Many of those issues of false positives are caused because the file that's moved doesn't contain sensitive data. It's not a security risk. How do we get companies to start to reevaluate their data to understand actually what is sensitive and what, quite frankly, doesn't require the full weight of the cybersecurity team?
It's funny, I was with the Gartner analyst this week, had a whole conversation on data security governance. We go at it from the angle of understanding what people are doing, understand what files they're working with, and then apply analytics to that. He was making a case, and it was a pretty compelling case, Brian Lowens from Gartner, that you want to look at the data first, find out what's valuable, what's not valuable, then have the people, then have the analytics. He made a good point in that, and we often say, identify your high-risk users, and your high-risk users aren't necessarily the ones that have privileges. Your high-risk users are the ones that have access to valuable intellectual property. I do think it makes a lot of sense to truly understand what data is worth protecting and what data is not worth protecting, and then figure out who has access to the data that's most valuable. But the misconception that happens a lot of the time, you know, especially through privileged access management systems, just the name itself, privileged access, you think IT professionals, you think people that, you know, have access to multiple servers and machines, but no, maybe not the cleaner, but it's quite often people in the organization that you don't expect that have a lot of access to the intellectual property and data that has the most value.
You said two things there which interest me. One was context, one was privilege. I'll deal with privilege first. One of the dangers we have in organizations is you join a company, you're given access. As you change job roles, as you're promoted, you're given new accesses. But nobody ever goes back and takes those other accesses away. The general excuse is, oh, well, there'll be a handover of 3 months, 6 months. Most people's memory doesn't extend beyond 3 days when it comes to this. How much work has to be done to identify and deal with all of these overprivilege granting that is going on?
Privilege creep is what we call it. I feel like we've spoken before, Ian, and we have not. It's a one-way street, exactly like you said. Privileges only go up. One of the truisms, I think, is the longer a person's been with a company, sometimes the bigger an insider threat they are. It's interesting, and I actually haven't thought about it until we were just talking about it right now, in that it's hard to peel back those privileges and stay on top of what everyone has access to in the same way that taking a prevention approach to data loss, which is what DLP tools tried to do for a long time, is also very difficult because classifying data and saying, okay, what files can what person see at what time, it's just too dynamic a world right now. Once again, I would make the case that taking a detect and respond approach based on visibility is much more realistic than trying to take a prevent approach based on certain privileges being granted or certain files being noted as classified. Now, you have to do some of that stuff. It's table stakes. Don't get me wrong. You need an access management tool. But I really do believe you've got to have that visibility because things change and privileges go up and files get renamed and moved around. And if you don't have that broad visibility and those early warning signs when people are starting to touch files that they don't normally touch or that they shouldn't be touching, then you're going to unfortunately make yourself more prone to data exfiltration.
Context is part of this because if we look at what people are doing, you or I might suddenly be pulled into a collaborative group. As part of that, documents will be shared with us that we would never normally have access to. If we're not looking at context, i.e. we're in that group, therefore we have access to the documents, then the system will immediately start throwing false positives. Yes. The same is true of a director of marketing. He might be reasonably expected to be sharing confidential information with partners, yes, except one day he shares it with his potential new employer. How do we define that context so that it doesn't become an excuse for not catching exfiltration?
You have to be able to see it. In your first example where you're part of a work group, all of a sudden you've got access to information. If you see the environment that the person's working in and you see that they're on email to five or six people, and then you see that they send an email back to those five or six people saying that was a great working group session, well, you've got a sense for why they got the file. If you then see someone who sends that file to their personal email account, then you can see from their personal email account that it went to an email address of a competitor, you've got a pretty good hint. Just last night I was with a customer here, They were talking about an employee that was sending receipts to the person's girlfriend. The person's girlfriend was then sending them in a different format. So they had this whole structure set up where they were getting reimbursed for stuff they shouldn't get reimbursed for. I mean, it was tens of thousands of dollars, which isn't tons, but they're not sure how long it had been going on for. You know, it goes back to the context and understanding what they're doing before and after and being able to see that in one spot. Because if you're flipping between different applications and the timeline and the chronology of what happened when and with whom people were working won't be clear. If you can see all that in one spot, you can much better ascertain whether it's part of a new project that they're working on or part of their new job search show up with real value add when they get there.
Collaboration groups also throw up another threat. There are good reasons why people don't have access to all the data in an organization. The problem with collaboration is that when people come together from different groups, they don't say, oh, I can share this data with you. They say, I will share all this data with you. The net result is you get data access creep. How do we identify that from a contextual perspective? Or can we?
It's a risk mitigation game here. It's not a risk elimination. There's always going to be risk. And it's all about trying to have as much visibility and have as much detection as possible to minimize that risk. The particular instance you said might be tough, to be honest. But I think the key thing, once again, is to understand, as you said earlier, what data is most valuable. We have it in a way that you can set up an alert for certain files or certain access to a folder. You can put time parameters around that. It's okay that they touch it within the July planning period. They're working on the plan for the next fiscal year. But all of a sudden, when it gets locked down and it's just in the finance folder from November on, then the people from marketing shouldn't be seeing it. Where there's a will, there's a way, and you can't stop everything. But having more visibility and having some of those early indicators and then knowing the context around the alerts when they happen helps mitigate that risk.
One of the things we don't see very often is somebody taken to court over an insider or malicious attack. The big reason for that is gathering that evidence within the organization, being able to forensically prove that what they did was not what they were allowed to do, that they took actions that deliberately did this. This wasn't an accidental exfiltration of data. But very few systems understand forensics, which is why we don't see the court cases. You have something different.
Yes, I have two stories for you. One is from the director of intellectual property protection at one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. He was there for 5 years, and we got together, and he estimated that 5% of the people in the company exfiltrated data. And I was like, no chance. There's 80,000 employees. There's no way that 4,000 employees are taking information around compounds being developed and pharmaceuticals being developed. And he's like, Mike, definitely. Now, this guy came from the FBI and paid to be paranoid and stuff like that. But just like you said, lack of evidence and lack of that breadcrumb trail of exactly what happened made it very difficult for the organization to prosecute people. He said he did 600 investigations in his 5 years there, and three people were terminated due to lack of evidence. Zervit's Insider Threat Management Platform, and he's like, oh my God, I wish I had that. Because exactly like you said, so often right now when you're pulling information from different systems, you're deducing what happened as opposed to knowing for sure what happened. And the second story, which is a big coffee retailer in the world, the CISO I was speaking with there was saying, Mike, you've helped end finger pointing in our organization. Because in the past, I'd go to too many meetings. One group would be pointing at the other group, being like, it's your fault, or you did it, or we didn't do this. They couldn't get to the core issue because they didn't know exactly what happened. By having that conclusive transcript of who did what, where, when, on what machine, he said, we've ended the finger pointing, we've made meetings more efficient, they can get to the actual issue, as opposed to arguing about who did what, where, when.
One of the common form of attacks that gets misread as insider is stolen credentials. Somebody gains access to a machine, they gain access to somebody's credentials, they then use that to go through other systems. That individual is always going to look like the fall guy to many organizations. But forensically, there's opportunities to look at times of day, other markers. These come back to context. How often do you find customers go that extra distance, not just to look for the credentials that were used in the attack, but actually to really prove it was that individual?
I mean, that's the classic use case for detecting anomalous behavior. We're continuing to improve the analytics that we have such that you can see when that credential is doing something that normally doesn't. A lot of our customers now, to include this one that I was with last night, is actually downloading all of our data and using it to analyze behavior by group or by individual and when there's an abnormality within that group or within that individual. You know, I'm a big believer that AI and artificial intelligence, machine learning will play a very important role in security. Without a doubt, there's a massive labor shortage of security professionals out there, and there's more and more data every day. So AI and ML have to help the situation and will help the situation. I'm also a believer that it's relatively early in the life stage of those technologies. The precursor to those working effectively is good data. Right now, we have very comprehensive data. We have lots of rules against that data. We have some analytics. Both partnering, developing, and trying to augment the analytics such that you can start seeing with those compromised credentials and it's clearly Ian's doing something he doesn't normally do or Mike's doing something he doesn't normally do. And then you can look further into their behavior and see if it is in fact compromised.
AI is continually touted as a magic bullet for cybersecurity, but the reality is that, as with all magic bullets, it disappears at the moment you most want it. For AI to really be effective, what does it have to do? How do we have to use it better?
Yeah, I'm laughing here. I'm laughing because it advertised as the magic bullet for a couple of years there when it came to insider threat. There was a whole class of solutions out there, user, entity, and behavior analytics that was the answer. Then people spent a couple of years putting that in, baselining, and they got a lot of noise. It turned out it wasn't the answer. I was like with another customer last night from a big financial services, and he's just like, I'm sick of detecting anomalous behavior because it's not anomalous. It's someone like printing out Christmas cards at 10 o'clock at night in the office. Yeah, they printed 200 copies because they didn't want to print a nice printer in the office. They don't have a nice printer at home. It's tricky, especially with humans, because they're much less predictable than machines and networks and nodes and stuff like that. But there are ways, if you focus on particular use cases and you make the data digestible in a way where it's very easy to see what people or what groups are acting differently than they normally act. You have to have realistic expectations. It's not the magic bullet. You have to really work on defining use cases that you want to run analytics on and or run it reports on. It's getting better, but part of the problem is just these unrealistic expectations. People don't realize that they have to put work in. They have to build the use cases in, not just rely on the analytics, but you know, make sure they have context around it and make sure they have good reporting against it.
You've just closed a major funding round. What's coming up for you over the next few months?
Yeah, good question. Product, it's the most important thing. We're very fortunate to have 1,800 customers worldwide. We just closed this $33 million round of financing. But from my perspective, as we've been saying along, there's more and more data out there. The attack surface is getting bigger and bigger. To the extent that we can bring visibility from all of those different places that people go, because we were talking earlier around Slack channels and instant messaging and mobile phones, obviously, and laptops. So we want to have as broad visibility as possible. We want to be able to run legitimate analytics against it and good reporting against it. It's where a lot of the funding is going, obviously sales and marketing to expand our footprint, make sure we're servicing our customers well. But at the end of the day, in security, no offense to the sales and marketing folks, it's security folks talking to each other because there's a lot of hype in cybersecurity. And I haven't met anyone whose first reaction isn't to call up some of their buddies in security and say, hey, does this actually work? And as a result, I'm adamant or a huge proponent of really making sure our customers are getting value from the software, making sure that it works. I got a bunch of product requirements last night when I was with some customers that were building those in because in my mind, that's how you grow as a company. That's how you help security professionals the most.
Validation and paranoia, good things in security, people.
Absolutely. Only the paranoid survive in lots of different areas. I've been in technology for over 20 years, cybersecurity for a while, and being a CISO is a tough job. I always joke, there's more and more threat vectors, and there's more and more vendors claiming they do everything. So they got to make sense of both sides of that equation. I often spend time telling our customers and prospects what we don't do, because I'm trying to let them know that we don't do everything, but we're going to try to help them with some specific problems, you know, mostly around insider threat, obviously, and then actually deliver on that, because they got a lot of threats to worry about. They don't need to be worrying about misset expectations by vendors and or unfulfilled promises by vendors.
Sounds like a busy year coming up.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's very busy right now, but that's a high-class problem. I feel fortunate. Someone made the joke that cybersecurity is like the fruit basket at hotels. Every morning there's a new basket of fruit, which means every morning and every day there's new threats out there. We want to help security professionals deal with those threats. Like I said, it's a tough job. We want to provide them with visibility and with information that makes them feel that one of the threat vectors has been mitigated. Our mission is to identify and eliminate insider threats, and that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you for talking to us today, Mike.
Good stuff, Ian. Thank you.